Welcome back, everyone, to The Xamarin Show. I'm your host, James Montemagno. And today, I have my best friend in the entire world, Nish Anil, back with me for a second time talking about microservices. Nish, how's it going?
Good. How's things for you?
Great. We just saw each other 5 seconds ago. So if you haven't watched yet, Nish just did an amazing microservices 101 for us because I know nothing about microservices, but Nish knows everything. So he walked through containers, images, registries, orchestrators, all those good things. Look at all those words, Nish. I'm becoming a pro.
You are, actually. I think you will be a better presenter for microservices from the next time.
No, that is not true. Not true at all. Well, we got pretty far into the overview of sort of how to take monolithic, you know, applications and break them into microservices. But I think you can do this live, right? You want to walk through some really cool demos?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a time to show all the tools that we talked about in the previous video. So let's get started. So quickly, on my screen, this is the .NET side. I'm pretty sure you will be familiar with this. So we have some great content. If you're first time at doing microservices, you can get started here. So this is the microservices, swim lane. You can click on this. You can go into this and look at there. There's a get started. So click on that. And there is a hands-on tutorial on getting started with microservices. And, this is an entry point to microservices. So this is all about understanding all those jargons we talked about, you know, Docker's, Kubernetes, and, pulling this from the container registry, pushing it to the container registry and things like that. And this is a great way to get started with writing a web API and then Dockerizing it. Oh, cool. And then pushing it to, you know, container registry. But we will leave this here for now for you to try it out. And we will go back to our demo, which is something, James, I wanted to do something which Brady left off. So I had his code, which is the Contoso Online Orders.API. I think he went ahead and explained all these amazing stuffs out there in your previous video. Mm-hmm. So there is a shop controller and admin controller, which are nothing but the REST endpoints, which is going to, take the request, HTTP requests and give back the responses that is needed, right? So I'm going to run this application. So let's go and do that. So it's going to build. So what I wanted to do is I want to take the same demo. I haven't made changes to this code. It's only what I'm going to do it right now. So this is the page. So we have the Swagger endpoint, which comes by default with the .NET 5 projects now. So you have the store API, which we talked about. There's an admin, there's a shop. Okay. So if you want to get to the products, you can hit on the products, try it out, execute. And obviously, there is absolutely no response because we just, hosted it.
Just debugged it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So we can actually put in some data. And that for that, I'm going to use this is an interesting thing I found it on Brady's repo. We have this nice REST client installed. So we have this. We can actually make posts to this API. So I'm just going to hit send request. Whoa. And it just goes and puts in some data. And this is really cool. So I'm just going to change this, make this from cups to maybe t-shirts, and then make another post. And then finally, when I make a get request, you will have both of these things come
back. That's amazing.
So, whoa. Yeah, that's this crazy. Is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Everything in VS Code, which is pretty cool. Yeah. Right. So the other thing that I did basically on this is to before I can go and do something to make it more containerized and Kubernetes and other things, I basically wanted to see, like, what is my environment where this is being run? So I wrote a log file, which says environment.osversion.version.string. So I'm going to put a breakpoint here. And let's go back and just make that request. And you can see that the breakpoint is hit. And you can see there's a version string, which says Microsoft Windows NT, right? As expected. Mm-hmm. Now, this is good. So now you know that .NET is basically cross-platform. So let's go and install this on Linux. To do it on Linux, I mean, I could definitely do WSL and push it directly there. But we are now talking about containers and Kubernetes and other things. So let's containerize this, right? So okay. I'm going to use Control-Shift-P. And I just say add Docker. And there is an option called add Docker files to workspace. So I click on that. It asks me what application is this. So this is an ASP.NET Core application. And it asks me which project do I want to add this file. So I click on CS Project. Now I choose which operating system I want. I mean, you can have Linux containers and Windows containers, but I want to choose Linux. And the advantage of using Linux containers is that, you know, you may, in the Kubernetes cluster, when you're running multiple applications, you may have a Node.js application, Java applications, which are running on Linux. You can also have the .NET application run side by side when targeted to Linux, right? So this is a very cool feature. So hit on Linux, and 8443 is the port that is going to be exposed out of the container. So when it gets deployed, we can always reach the service by that port, right? It's asking me, do I need a Docker Compose file? At the moment, I don't need a Docker Compose file, so I'm just going to say no. So it's asking me to override. So I had a configuration earlier, so I'm just going to override that, which is fine. So now I have this Docker file automatically created, right? So you can see this. And I also have this Docker ignore file. Ignore file is just like the Git ignore file that will ask you to ignore things that when you package your application. So a Docker file is basically, think of it like an instruction set for Docker to kind of compose your image, right? Or kind of build the images. So what we're doing is we want the ASP.NET 5.runtime. So we say from this, right? So you can have a container based out of the other images too, or if you can have an image based on other image, right? For example, if you just want the operating system like Ubuntu, you can say from Ubuntu and then go and write other things that you need to work on. Okay. But in our case, we are using ASP.NET, so we can just go ahead and say ASP.NET 5.0, which will have the runtime required to run on, I think we use Debian in this case, so it will pull in all the details that is needed. So actually the Docker file for creating this image is also out there open source. You can check that out too. So basically these are instruction sets, and think of it like, you know, every instruction, what you see here, it kind of like creates layers in images. So you'll have multiple layers that's being created.
Gotcha. Right?
So yeah, so there is SDK. So here, this is a step. This is a very interesting step. So what we do here is we don't compile the code in Windows. We actually copy the entire code into the container and we compile it within the SDK that we are pulling in from here.
Right? Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That makes sense, because it's like you're building it on the actual image and machine in which you'll be running. Yeah.
Correct. That's cool. And I don't want to go into the details, but we use something called as multi-stage image. So what happens is basically what it matters is the end point. What we're doing is we're doing the build and we are telling we need the runtime. And then we say we are pushing all the things that were artifacts which are used to build it and create it using publish, that is only the thing that will be copied into the final image. And that's what we are doing it here.
Oh, right? Cool.
So the final image will have only your code, and it will also have this entry point which says, okay, how do I execute this? So it's going to make this .NET and run your DLL, and that will run your web application with the port that we provided here, right?
Very cool.
Right. So let's run this application. So for this, I'll just go to VS Code and use a docker.net code launch and then hit the run.
So you've installed VS Code. I'm assuming there's an extension and you also have something installed on your machine, correct?
That is very right. So here's a Docker extension, if you can see this here. So not the Docker extension, the Docker for desktop app. This is free. Mm-hmm. You can go get that installed. And we can get into these details a little bit. So for those who are getting started, so if you go into the settings, what I do is I also set up saying use the WSL2 based engine. Mm-hmm. So that way it's using the WSL2 to give us Linux, run the Linux containers, right? So so that's the Docker that you need. And once you have that, I also have this Docker extension on the VS Code. It's just hidden behind somewhere. Yeah, there you go. So which also shows you all the containers that are available on my system right now, the images that is there. And it also can connect to the Docker hub, which is the container registry, right? So you have some really nice cool tools over here, right? So I think it's pulled in some browser, if I remember correctly. Let's see, where is it running? Probably this one. Okay. Yeah, having multiple screens. So here you go. So it gave us a new port. So let's go to Swagger endpoint and go to products, get products, try it out, execute. And now you can see how VS Code can debug your Docker applications too. And if I go to the watch and string now, you can see the same application without doing much. It's just running on Unix systems, right?
Very cool. That's awesome. So you are literally debugging from Windows and VS Code into a Docker image that's running on WSL, the Windows subsystem for Linux. And this thing is running in Linux and you're debugging it from VS Code.
Pretty much. And it's super fast, right?
Very cool. That's awesome.
Right. So so that's it. I mean, that's it. Now we have containerized this application, which is all cool. So now you can see that, you know, the images that were built is all here. So basically for this demo, what I did is I created two images. So for to show that, what I want to show you here is the startup.cs. If you look at, I have this right now, whatever is being stored is basically on the add memory cache. Basically, we're using this iStore data store service to use a in-memory cache. But in production, I would want to use something like a more realistic storage, which is Cosmos DB storage. So I built two images, one with the in-memory and the other with the Cosmos DB, which for this demo, I'm trying to treat it like a test or a dev environment and a prod environment just to, you know, differentiate between the two, right? So once that is built, so that you can see where you can actually go to the command prompt, use the tool like Docker and say images, and you'll see all the images that is being, unfortunately for in my case, I have, not unfortunately, but I have a lot of images because I work on day in and day out on containers. So eShop has a lot of things dumping in as images. But for this demo, we have to focus on this hyphen dev. This is the same image. And then it also has this hyphen prod, right? There's somewhere here. Yeah, there's.
Okay.
Now you see this image, which has my name somewhat on that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that is the thing representing your container registry, right? So when you're building your images, you can actually say Docker and tag it with your container registry. So this is my container registry, right? So if you look at my Docker Hub, it's nothing but my username on Docker. Okay, so let's go to this. And you can see that this is the Docker Hub username. And okay. I can go to hub.docker.com, for example. Let's go to that, hub.docker.com. And it should have all my images that I've been hosting all here.
Oh, cool.
Right?
Nice.
Right. So the way you once you tag it as your username slash your image, you can actually do one more command called Docker push and give that same image, whatever you built, and it will go and push it into the Docker Hub. Right?
Oh, very cool.
There is a step on authentication of Docker and other things, which is fairly easy to do it. If not, go through our .NET, you know, get started section, and it actually briefs out all these things there.
Oh, cool.
Right? So now I build these two images, and I push it to Docker Hub. Now is the time to deploy it to production, right? Something okay. like Kubernetes. Right? So for Kubernetes, what I'm going to do is I'm using a tool called kubectl, which is like a client tool to interact with Kubernetes. So let me show you some nice commands to work with it. For example, I have something called configs. I want to know which are the Kubernetes that is configured on my client. So I have this get context. So you can see that there is a Kubernetes that comes with Docker Desktop. Mm-hmm. And there is also a Kubernetes that I'm working with, which is the managed Kubernetes service, which is AKS. So right now they're deployed in the AKS, which is the Azure Kubernetes Services, right? I can also use the Docker Desktop for all testings and other things, but Docker Desktop gives you only one node, which is the one VM, which is your one machine. But in AKS, I can play around with multiple VMs and other things, like, you know, I can scale and do whatnot, right?
Gotcha.
Right. So so now to access this, I have already deployed this to Kubernetes, and I'll show you how. To deploy these to Kubernetes, you have to work with, as I mentioned earlier, you have to work with YAML files, which is more like a contract that you will sign up with the Kubernetes. So it takes in some, you know, parameters like this, like, you know, last, what are the object like kind is deployment, and you define, this is my deployment. And then the important aspect here is in the deployment file, we say, okay, what does Kubernetes want to run here is basically the image that I need to pull from my Docker Hub, right? And gotcha. I name them as hyphen dev because I'm actually pulling in dev. And similarly, I also have another YAML file, which is the prod. And here I am pulling in hyphen prod, right?
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
Right. So these are now running in my Kubernetes on AKS. So I'm just going to use kubectl get pods. And you can see that these are the pods that are running. Now, oh, cool. I think one terminology we didn't explain is what is a pod. In Kubernetes world, containers are run inside pods.
Okay.
And pods can have multiple containers. So, and it's typically useful in a scenario like sidecar and other things like that. So let's to access these services, we are going to use something called as an ingress, and we have ingress configured here. So it's basically, it gives you this public IP. So this is where right now this is being hosted. For example, if I just say Swagger, so this is running from my AKS, right? So
okay.
This is all, yeah. So you can see that there's something called as dev that is being used, right? And there are dev and prod, which is installed directly. As I showed, there are two prods. So I have configured this in my ingress configuration that, you know, what should be my root, what should be my prod, what should be my dev, right? So let's take up, we're talking about Xamarin. So let's use a Xamarin app to show this. So this is right now, if you refresh it now, it's actually coming from the dev environment. You can see that this is all dev data. Now, if I go in and let's go to the ingress of YAML, and you can see that this is my path, and here the host, the root path is basically pointed to the dev, right? If I want to get to prod, I can also go to the prod as well. Mm. But, you know, as a mobile application, it doesn't need to know multiple paths, because in the ingress itself, you can configure something like this. So I'm going to change this to prod here, which is my root, and go quickly onto my and this is my ingress. So I'm going to say kubectl apply, and this is how you apply configurations to Kubernetes. I'm going to say apply this. So what it does, it's basically, it says it has gone and configured it for me. So now if I go back to my client and just refresh it, you can see that the prod data comes in without making any changes to the mobile client.
Whoa. Right? So the mobile app just has one endpoint, and that's all mm-hmm. it knows about. And then because Kubernetes has this configuration to say go to dev or go to prod, and there it yep. is. It's just one endpoint, and that's all you that's need it. To know. Very that's cool. It.
So I don't know. I was trying to put in everything together to make it useful and understandable for microservices, but there is a lot more to this. But yeah. I just want to tell you that, you know, like when you have this kind of configuration oriented approach towards this microservices development, it makes it much more easier for teams to kind of like, you know, scale, do things more, roll out multiple features in productions. Mm. You can test things like this. It's pretty cool to do things like that.
It's great just to see it kind of in action, just that kind of endpoint where like you were running, you had a bunch of data locally from dev environment, Memcache, and then now it's literally actually hitting a different database, right? Hitting Cosmos DB that you showed right. completely different. So that's actually a real wow factor. It's like if you want to switch out your database, or you want to test a new database, or you test a new functionality, especially from dev, prod, test, anything, you can just have this one file and then just go, done. That's very cool. And what we'll do is we'll make sure that we put all of the show notes down here in all the links, everything like that, that Nish showed off. And of course, links to the first video in case some of this terminology went over your head like it does for me. And I've rewatched that video 25 times now. So Nish, this is awesome. I mean, that's a lot in there. I'm going to rewatch this video 25 times as well. So.
Perfect. I mean, it's always a challenge to put together right content for microservices because there's so many things.
Yeah.
But I hope this was useful. And if people have more questions, we can specifically answer those things into a separate video, right? We can create hundreds of videos out of microservices, I guess.
Exactly. Just like a microservice, break it into smaller videos. Well, awesome. Right. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this awesome demo. And to me, honestly, this is like really, really cool. And I can't wait to take some of my big monolithic services and start breaking them up into smaller pieces. And it's really cool just to see the tooling do a lot of work for you automatically. So that's really nice. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Xamarin Show. I hope everyone enjoyed this this video and learning about microservices with Nish. Leave comments down below wherever you're at watching this video. We'll try to answer them. And of course, make sure you give this a like and a thumbs up over there on the YouTube. That goes into the YouTube Google algorithm of goodness that recommends this video to other people interested in microservices. Well, that's going to do it. Thanks for watching. I'm James Montemagno, and this has been another Xamarin Show.